Welcome to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham. If you have a comment, email it to me, box13 at greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/radiodetectives. Well, today's episode is brought to you by the financial support of our listeners. Thanks for your support, and you can support the program at support.greatdetectives.net. Now it's time for today's episode of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, the Lansing Fraud Matter Part 5. And coming up after Johnny Dollar, we'll listen to Part 2 of The Widow Was Willing.
From Hollywood, it's time now for...
Johnny Dollar.
Jim Carter, Johnny. Anything on Hillary Franks?
He just telephoned me 2 minutes ago.
What?
I'm on my way to meet him now and try and make a deal. I told him if he'd give me a statement about the attempt to fraud worldwide on Lansing's $50,000 policy, I'd do my best to have them drop charges.
Well, you didn't make any promises, Johnny.
I couldn't make any promises, Jim, but I'll do my best to see that the charges are dropped if he gives me that statement.
Well, if he gives you that statement, I'll help you. Where are you meeting him?
At a place near here.
He knows every cop in the area is looking for him.
Yeah.
Be sure he doesn't give you a bullet, kiddo.
Tonight and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account, submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar in Tucson, Arizona, to the Universal Adjustment Bureau Home Office, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is a further accounting of expenditures during my investigation of... Well, it was a case of $50,000 insurance to one Arlene Kennedy. Unless I could prove my point in the Lansing fraud. Expense account item 10, $10, cab fare, from my hotel to the Mission San Javier to talk to Hillary Franks, the insurance agent with no future ahead. I used a taxi cab instead of my rented car because I didn't want to waste time searching around for the Mission. It was a few miles outside of town, over rough and broken desert roads. An ancient missionary church standing stark against the moon-filled night.
Here we are, mister.
Good. Here. Keep the change.
Well, don't you want me to wait for you?
No. I'll get back okay.
Not many places to call a cab from out here.
Yeah, I know.
One of the Padres, your friend?
No, I'm new around here.
You all right, mister?
Hmm.
You feel all right? You loaded or something?
No, why?
We're coming out here at midnight.
Well, it's just a whim, friend. Don't worry about it.
Have it your way. Mister?
Yeah?
You gonna meet somebody here or something?
Why?
I just saw a guy standing over by the bell tower.
Oh, thanks. Good night.
Here, Mr. Dollar. Careful, Dollar.
Hillary Franks had a .38 pointed right at my chest. In the bright moonlight, I could see that he was still wearing the same clothes he'd had on 2 days before in his office. He needed a shave, and judging from the circles under his eyes, he hadn't slept much. He was pale and shaken. A gun wobbled in his hand.
Anybody with you?
I came alone.
Did you tell anybody you were meeting me?
Jim Carter. He's been working the case with me.
Did you tell him where?
No. Hey, look, you don't need that gun, Franks. Put it away. I just came here to talk with you.
All right.
Thanks. Want a smoke?
Thank you. Why did you talk to Carter? What did he say?
He said he'd help me try and have the charges dropped against you if you give us a statement. Now, you have two of us on your side, Mr. Franks, if you want to cooperate. Do you?
I want to straighten out what I can, Mr. Dollar.
Well, now's the time to do it. What was your deal with Arlene Kennedy, James Lansing's sister and beneficiary?
I met Arlene Kennedy right after my wife died. I guess I was very low.
Oh, that's perfectly natural.
I became interested in Arlene because we had a great many things in common. So I thought. I mean, she was a widow and had no one except her brother, James Lansing, in Los Angeles. And we went together, and eventually I asked her to marry me. But she laughed at me.
Why?
I guess I'm not an exciting man, a witty one, or even an interesting one, Mr. Dollar. Mrs. Kennedy made me feel as though my whole life had been hopeless, useless. Raising children, selling insurance. She made me feel as though I'd miss a great deal in life unless I married her. What is it? What do you want from me? What do you want from life, I'd ask her. And she'd only laugh at me.
Go on.
I just can't tell you how desperate it made me feel. I loved her, Mr. Dollar. I wanted her.
Did she ever answer your questions?
Oh, many times. She pointed out that her trust funds pay her over $700 a month for life. And she knew that my commissions and salary as a broker came to about the same. Oh, Mr. Dollar, we could have lived very comfortably on that kind of income. But Arlene talked of traveling, of Europe, of clothes, and, oh, I don't know, things her family had been able to afford for her once many years ago. And she said she wouldn't marry unless we could look forward to that kind of life.
She wanted $50,000 in cash instead of money just trickling in every month.
That's about it.
When did she get around to the proposition, her brother's insurance?
Her brother came here from Los Angeles one day. The doctors there gave him a year or two to live. Oh, yes, he was pretty shot. Been drinking for years. He'd used up all his money, oh, a long time before. He asked Arlene to help him. She paid his apartment rent and gave him enough money for liquor. And then one day she came right out with it. She said she was investing in him. And he was a good risk. Because she knew he'd die. That's how she put it to me.
Mm-hmm.
Arlene said all I had to do was see to it that her brother had a nice fat policy. He was going to die. Why not cash in on it? I must have been crazy to even think about it.
How did you work it? I mean, how did Dr. Mayhood pass him?
I paid a man $100 to go to Dr. Mayhood's office and take the physical for Lansing.
What was the man's name?
Oh, no, I wouldn't tell you that, Mr. Dollar. He's not involved in anything.
All right, we'll let that go. Once you arranged for Lansing to become insured, you and Mrs. Kennedy just planned on waiting for him to die.
That was the general idea, in view of what the Los Angeles doctors had said. Once I'd done it, I mean, gotten him insured, it was too late to turn back.
Did you want to turn back?
Yes.
What did Mrs. Kennedy say about backing out?
She thought I was weak and afraid.
Oh, then things weren't so good between you.
Oh, they never were, Mr. Dollar.
The idea was to wait for Lansing to die, collect the $50,000, and get married, huh?
I suppose so, yes, but once he was insured, she talked less and less about our getting married.
You're leaving something out, Mr. Franks.
Huh?
Didn't she tell you exactly what kind of a position you were in? Didn't she fix it so that you couldn't make a move? Legally, she'd done nothing wrong. It was you who had arranged for the physical, you who had made the application for insurance in the name of her brother.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, she was clear about all that. And she told me so every time she felt like it.
When you write down what you just told me and sign it, we can hold it over Mrs. Kennedy's head to prove attempt to defraud and collusion. Now, would you do that, Mr. Franks?
Yes.
Then I guess we'd better get back into town.
All right.
Come on, Mr. Franks. We walked 3 miles over to the highway, flagged down a car, and got back to the hotel about 2:30 in the morning, got Jim Carter out of bed. Enclosed fine notarized statement of Hillary Franks explaining his part in the matter regarding policy 678JN23L. Before he was finished, Carter had already telephoned the Tucson police, telling them that the charges were being dropped against Franks and that he was no longer a fugitive. Then he placed a long-distance call to Worldwide's president in Hartford.
Jim Carter, sir. I want to ask you not to prosecute Hillary Franks in this matter. Yes, sir, he's given us a complete statement about the whole thing. I don't think we have to go any farther than that. Well, look, the guy made one mistake, the first one in 17 years. He suffered enough for it already. Yes, sir. Dollar feels that way, too. Yes, sir. I think it's okay, Mr. Franks.
All right. I thank you.
What are you going to do, Mr. Franks?
Well, sure, I'll never sell insurance again. I think I'll close up and just move away. Far away. Thank you.
Poor guy.
Oh, let's clean up the rest of this and get out of this town.
Sure, Johnny.
Hillary Franks pulled out of Tucson that afternoon. When Mrs. Kennedy was shown a carbon of the enclosed statement of Hillary Franks, she instructed her attorneys to withdraw the suit against Worldwide. Expense account, item 11, $75, hotel and board while in Tucson. Item 12, $402.15, plane tickets, Tucson to Hartford for Carter and myself. We were scheduled to leave at 1:30 in the morning. 2 hours before plane time, I dropped by Mrs. Kennedy's house to have her sign a release of all claims on the insurance company. And for other reasons.
Help me, Mr. Dollar. Please help me.
I carried Arlene Kennedy to the couch and I did what I could for her. I phoned the police and told them to bring an ambulance. After that, I began looking around. I found a dark stain on the window still leading outside to the back of the house. On the floor, a blood-stained letter opener. There was no gun in sight anywhere. I decided if I had been stabbed with a letter opener, it would be easier to try to make it out the back way than risk the street that was bound to be full of policemen any minute. I was right. Hillary Franks was on a ledge of rock that rose above the back of the house. I ducked behind some cactus plants.
Get away from me!
You know I won't. You know I wouldn't when I let you walk out this afternoon.
Johnny Dollar!
That's right. Now put that gun away and come on off that ledge.
Get away! Go away!
You missed by a mile. You don't know anything about shooting a gun. Come on down.
Stay where you are. Don't do anything foolish.
I'm coming after you.
I'll shoot!
Good shot, Dollar.
Can you walk?
No.
Why did you do it, Mr. Franks?
I came back to see her tonight. She laughed at me. Said if we had gotten the insurance money, she was planning to run away with someone else.
Oh.
She just used me all along.
Mrs. Kennedy was dead when the police got there. Hillary Franks died en route to the receiving hospital. Item 13, $15, hotel, one more night in Tucson. Expense account total, $1,121.13. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Remember, there'll be another exciting story beginning next Monday night.
Next week, a quick trip to New York, to the bright lights, the glamour of Broadway, with its theaters, its actors, and, some very bad actors. You might even say, killers. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood. Written by John Dawson, it is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone. Heard in this week's cast were Mary Jane Croft, Vivi Janis, Gene Tatum, Hi Everback, Barney Phillips, Russell Thorson, and Howard McNear. Musical supervision by Amerigo Marino. Be sure to join us on Monday night, same time and station, for another exciting story of Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. This is Roy Rowan speaking.
Welcome back. Well, not one of my favorite cereals. I thought it wasn't bad. It was kind of involved. But you got the feeling that we really needed that shooting to happen at the end. Or we wouldn't have much of a story overall in terms of a detective story, you know. He signs the statement. She goes ahead and gives up on the claim, and that would have been that. Not a whole lot of drama. Tacking on the shooting kind of was necessary for a plot point, but kind of a stretch from a story point. This is an adaptation, actually, of a John Lund story. It was based on the Chicago fraud matter, which originally aired February 6, 1953. And we played it for you 16 months or 18 months ago on in episode 0560. I should also mention before we get into our Carter Brown story that you will not have a story about Broadway, as that story, the Nick Schoen matter, is really a great Christmas story. So we're going to skip over it for now, and we'll come back to it at a more seasonally appropriate time in 6 months. All right, well, let's go ahead and take a listen to our second program, The Widow is Willing.
Carter Brown Mysteries. Adventures in excitement and suspense, based on the best-selling novels by the slick storytelling sensation, Carter Brown.
Have you ever woken up in a bedroom in the middle of the night and heard a weird whispering voice, switched on the light, and found the room empty? Around the office of Excelsior Insurance Incorporated, I was considered a pretty tough investigator. Mark Hunt, the guy with a marble heart. But I didn't get much sleep the rest of the night in that empty room in the gaunt, gold-bright house, with the rain sheets whipping viciously against the window and the wind whining outside the walls. I was glad when daylight came. Daylight's such a nice, sane thing to see. Everything that sneaks out of the graveyard at midnight is back there before dawn. Who is it?
Cross. John Cross.
Okay, come in.
I was sent to fetch you, Hunt.
Hmm?
Yeah, Lila was wondering what had happened to you. It's late. Breakfast's over.
Yeah, that's okay. I've kind of lost my appetite this morning anyway.
Why? What's the matter?
Oh, it's nothing really. Only I'm just beginning to understand that old guy.
What old guy?
The one who rode me over. He made a couple of cryptic comments about this place. I'm beginning to see what he meant.
You're not making sense, but that's not my business. I was told to get you. The lawyers arrived.
Lawyer?
Sure, to read Henry Gobright's will. They're all gathered in the living room, and Lila figured you ought to be there, seeing that you're investigating Henry's death.
Oh, yeah, sure. I'll get dressed right away.
Okay, I'll get back. Oh, if you time it right, you'll miss all the legal mumbo-jumbo and get there for the interesting part.
John Cross was right. By the time I crept quietly into the living room and took a seat, the legal eagle, a lean, lifeless-looking bird, was getting down to business.
Before reading the section concerning the actual beneficiaries, I must say that I did my utmost to dissuade Mr. Goldbride from the course he took. My efforts were of no avail, and he insisted on couching his will in its present terms.
Thank you, Mr. Daventry. Would you please continue?
And now, as to the disposal of my estate. I am well aware that my wife married me only for what she could get. Therefore, I have not the slightest intention of allowing her to squander the wealth it took my family 5 generations to amass. I leave her a legacy of $10,000 and trust it will be enough to keep her until she remarries. I might add that I have long suffered watching the sheep's eyes made at my wife by John Cross, and knowing he's practically penniless, cannot help feeling a certain satisfaction in knowing that if they marry, it will undoubtedly be a love match.
Have always...
John, please.
The bulk of my estate I leave to my brother, Clem Goldbright. I realize that he is a waster, but I trust he has enough family pride to guard the family fortune. If my brother should die within 2 years of inheritance, my wife shall take over the whole estate. If she should die within a similar period, then the estate will revert to my friend Michael Dercrescu, who has for so long desired my paintings and other art treasures. There are other minor provisions, of course, $1,000 for the butler and $500 for the maid. And that, I think, is all. Has anyone any questions?
Yes, I have.
Yes, Mr. Goldbright?
That last condition, about the estate reverting on death, is that legal? Can it be contested?
Contested? Certainly not. It's a perfectly legal procedure.
But don't you see what it means? If Henry was murdered, if his fall wasn't an accident, it means there's a killer in this house. And that will is an open incitement to murder.
Come, Mr. Goldbright. Aren't you letting your imagination run away with you?
If I'm found one morning on the jetty like Henry was, that'll be a comforting thought.
The lawyer left after lunch. The rain hadn't let up, and that, combined with the terms of the will and Clem's outburst, produced an atmosphere like death row in a penal institution. Everyone retired early that night. I was back in my bedroom, and I was wishing it was someplace else, because the room kept reminding me of that whispering voice in the night. Since I couldn't stop thinking about it, I tried to figure out what the voice had been trying to tell me. Eternity can be held in captivity, it had said. Imprisoned for all to see. Of course. It meant a camera. If someone had taken a photograph as Henry plunged to his death, that was it. The voice meant that somewhere there was a negative that proved whether Henry fell or was pushed.
Who's that?
Me. Lila.
Oh, come in.
I've brought a bottle and two glasses.
Lila, that's an inspiration.
That's what I thought. Here, you do the pouring.
Uh-huh.
It's been such a dreadful day.
No, I won't argue with that.
I just couldn't stand being by myself.
Well, now you're not. Now, here's your drink.
Thanks. You know, it's funny, isn't it?
Sure. What?
That will. When I think of all the time I've been here in this ghastly place, of all the time I endured Henry, what do I get as a reward? $10,000.
Henry seems to have been an eccentric character.
Henry was a heel, pure and simple. But don't let's talk about him.
Okay. What will we talk about?
You. You and me.
That sounds an interesting subject.
I like you, Mark. You are my idea of a man. I haven't known a real man these last few years. Is that a very awful thing to say?
Let me think about it. No, I don't think it is.
I'm glad. I wouldn't like you to think I'm awful.
I think you're beautiful.
Mark, the lights. They've gone out.
Yeah.
Mark! In the doorway. That figure. It's Henry!
As Lila's body collapsed to the floor, every hair on my head stood on end. In the doorway, bathed in an unearthly light, was the figure of a man with gray hair and a gray mustache. I grabbed for my gun. The figure was in front of me, but the laugh came from behind me. I whirled round, and when I turned back for the door, the figure was gone. I was heading for the door when I heard the voice again in the darkness.
Now, do you believe? Will you listen when I tell you that the secret of my death is held for all time, imprisoned in emotion, waiting to be found? Seek, and you shall discover.
Then suddenly the music stopped and the lights came on. I looked at my gun and then at Lila on the floor. As I picked her up and placed her on the bed, she stirred.
Mark.
Oh, it's okay, Lila. It's okay.
Did you see him?
I saw something.
It was Henry, back from the dead. Even from beyond the grave, he won't leave me in peace.
I don't think it was Henry. I fired at whatever it was, but my gun was empty. Someone's removed the clip. A genuine ghost wouldn't worry about bullets, but someone worried enough to take them out of my gun so I wouldn't fire any.
But who would do that? And why?
That's the $64,000 question. If we knew that, we'd know everything.
Mark, I'm scared. I can't go back to my room.
I've got a solution. Stay here.
Mark.
Yeah, we can finish the bottle. After breakfast next morning, we all gathered in the living room. Clem Goldbright had said he wanted to make an announcement, and everyone was wondering what it was.
Everyone's here? Good. I told you I had an announcement to make. Here it is. You all heard the terms of the will yesterday. You all know that World's End and everything that goes with it is my property.
There's no need to gloat.
You also heard me say what I thought of the will. Nothing more nor less than an open invitation to murder. Well, I have no intention of being murdered. So I'm asking you to leave, all of you.
Leave?
Now, wait a minute, Goldbrand.
That's just what I won't do, Mr. Cross. Wait a minute longer than I have to. The inquest is this afternoon. It shouldn't take long. With no evidence, the verdict will be accidental death. And I'm asking you all to leave by tomorrow. The launch will be waiting for you at 10:30 in the morning.
But, Clem, that doesn't give us much time to pack our things. I've got all my clothes.
All the low-down nasty...
You can call me all the names you like, Cross.
You might have some consideration for Lila, even if not for the rest of it.
The only person I'm considering is me. I'm sorry. 10:30 tomorrow morning. That's final.
I watched him stride out of the room, and I thought that boy was really scared. I got away from the rest of them and decided to take a walk around the island. The rain had stopped, but the sky was still lead gray, promising more. After I'd been out for about an hour and was heading back towards the house, I came on the figure of a woman. And what a figure. And what she was holding pulled me up short.
Well, hello there.
Hello yourself.
Nice to get some fresh air, huh?
Yeah. What's the camera for? You one of those photograph fiends?
Just a hobby.
I wouldn't have thought that you'd go in for photography. You're quite a surprising girl, Mavis.
Am I? One of the tragedies of my life is having a husband who's old enough to be jealous, but too old to be interesting. You look young enough to be interesting, Mark.
Well, thanks. What did you do before you acquired your husband?
Used to work in burlesque.
You like it?
Some of it. The time I worked with a magician, that was fun. Until his wife woke up to him.
Tell me, Mavis, did you think Henry Goldbright was murdered?
I wouldn't know, and I wouldn't care. I never liked him, and he never liked me. How much is the policy you'll have to pay on him?
$50,000.
Wow, that's a lot of hay.
Sure is.
And it depends whether he fell or whether he was pushed.
That's right.
Supposing someone gave you proof that he was pushed, would you pay them anything?
Of course. 20%'s the usual rate.
$10,000. That's not bad.
Thinking of claiming it, Mavis? Maybe you've got some proof, like a photograph or something?
A photograph of what?
Henry coming down with a view of the balcony behind him and maybe somebody standing on the balcony?
That's ridiculous.
Is it?
Whatever gave you an idea like that?
It was just something that came to me in the night. The inquest, as Clem Goldbright had prophesied, was straightforward and to the point. Verdict, accidental death, which meant we'd have to pay on the policy. It was late by the time I got back to World's End, and after dinner everybody got busy with their packing in preparation for departure in the morning. I took some liquor up to my room and locked the door. I didn't want any visitors, supernatural or seductive. Half a bottle later, I was asleep. But I wasn't destined for an undisturbed night. I grabbed my gun and made for the door.
Mark, did you hear it too?
Hear it? It'll haunt my dreams.
It sounded as though we're outside.
The balcony! Come on!
Mark, do you think...
I don't know what I think.
There's the balcony.
Lila, don't come near.
Cross, what is it?
I heard the scream. I came out and looked down. Now, keep away, Lila.
Why? Why, John?
Because there's a body on the jetty.
A body?
Who is it, Cross?
Take a look for yourself. Can you see?
Yeah. The moonlight shining full on it. That's Clem Goldbright.
Welcome back. Well, I can't say I feel a lot of sympathy with the widow in this story, and totally understand the decision to do the will the way he did it, in terms of not leaving her money. The problem with the heir was he was really a little too slow about getting folks out of the house. So now we have a real mystery to deal with, and we'll see how it starts to work out. Be sure and listen next week for part 3. Johnny Dollar begins a new serial on Monday. In the meanwhile, I'll send your comments to Box 13 at greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter, Radio Detectives, and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/radiodetectives. Well, from Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.